Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, March 3rd. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Samantha Liney Perfoss.
If you have a criminal record, it often follows you through life. It makes it harder to get hired, rent an apartment, or get into college. If your job application includes a check mark next to a criminal record, research shows that you are half as likely as other job seekers to get a callback from an employer. But a growing number of states now consider such a life sentence, well beyond time served, as unjust. Next month, Michigan will begin to selectively and automatically expunge the records of some felons and those convicted of misdemeanors. It joins six other states passing clean slate laws, making it easier for people to get a fresh start. No, this doesn't include violent crimes such as murder and rape. And in Michigan, there are still waiting periods of up to 7 years after prison release before the slate can be wiped. But in cities like Detroit, where one-third of residents have felony or misdemeanor convictions, Axios reports, expungement can pave the way to better jobs and restored dignity. One study found that, on average, wages rise by more than 20% just 1 year after someone's record has been cleared. Abraham Lincoln reportedly said, "I have always found that mercy bears richer fruits than strict justice." And this emerging bipartisan trend toward second chances suggests moral progress, and that America may be gradually embracing a higher sense of justice. Now, today's stories. Our first story: women, especially working moms, have borne the brunt of this economic downturn. But there may be a silver lining as corporations and governments move to address long-standing problems.
The pandemic has swamped many working mothers. Already struggling to balance the demands of work and home, they were suddenly confronted last spring with having to add all-day childcare and education monitoring to their long list of duties. The result? The first word that comes to mind is exhaustion, says Aleka Bylan, a working mom in Bend, Oregon. The challenges were felt so broadly that companies and politicians began to pay attention. Some corporations are re-examining their paid sick leave and flexible work policies. Business groups, such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Business Roundtable, want to target federal funds for childcare. The Biden administration and Republicans in Congress are pushing rival legislation that would help families pay for childcare, extend or increase unemployment benefits, and provide funding to fully reopen schools. Betsy Stevenson, an economic policy expert at the University of Michigan, says, "We're certainly having the conversation that we've needed to have for a very long time." This story was reported by Laurent Belsey for The Monitor.
Amid diverging narratives about the attack on the U.S. Capitol, five key players from the bipartisan 9/11 Commission told us that their experience offers relevant lessons for how to establish facts and win public trust.
2 months after rioters breached the U.S. Capitol, many questions about the January 6th attack remain unanswered. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has called for an outside, independent 9/11-type commission to determine the facts and causes of the attack. The 9/11 Commission, against significant odds, produced a unanimous report. It saw nearly all of its 41 recommendations implemented, including a massive reorganization of U.S. national security. So far, the prospects for establishing a similarly bipartisan commission to investigate January 6th appear even more daunting. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell threw cold water on the idea. Speaker Pelosi initially proposed an 11-member commission with only four Republicans. Still, five people who worked on the 9/11 Commission say it's possible to replicate that model. The key is finding people who will put country above party. People tell me you can't find 10 people who would put the country first. It's nonsense, says former New Jersey Governor Tom Keene, who chaired the commission. It's a huge country, and as long as the appointing authorities are looking for those types of people, I'm sure they'd find many, many of them, many of whom would be anxious to serve their country. The story was reported by Krista Case Bryant in Washington for The Monitor.
With a recovery nearing, our London columnist explores the pandemic's role as global change agent as businesses and schools reopen and climate change continues.
When we are finally free of COVID-19, will we have learned lessons that will make the world a better place? The economy, education, and the environment will offer litmus tests by which governments will be judged. As they implement recovery plans, will they take the same old pre-pandemic policy approaches they are familiar with? Or will the challenge of rebuilding inspire far greater policy ambition, bolstered by the political will needed to see it through? Governments are being buffeted by two countervailing forces. On the one hand, people, newly connected worldwide, are aware, as they never have been before, of just how grave the situation is and how much action will be needed to remedy it. At the same time, governments are under pressure to address immediate economic needs and simply get their countries up and running again. One early sign of deeper policy changes, if they are forthcoming, could appear on climate change. If the world could agree on an enforceable path to lower carbon emissions, it would have taken a big step toward building back better. This column was written by Ned Temko in London for The Monitor.
The war may be over, but Syria remains a nation riven by a variety of occupying forces, locked in an uneasy stalemate. What's the path forward?
Viewed from afar, the Syrian conflict, marking its 10th anniversary March 11th, has ground to a stalemate. President Bashar al-Assad has neither completely won nor lost. Despite Russian and Iranian backing, sizable parts of his country remain beyond his reach. But the situation on the ground is not static. Everywhere, the humanitarian toll mounts. After 400,000 dead, the Syrian people are confronting the tabulation of war crimes that include more than 300 documented uses of chemical weapons, torture, and indiscriminate attacks on cities and hospitals. Syria's battlefields are largely quiet, but years of United Nations peace efforts have made no headway. The United States told the Security Council in December that Damascus was preparing to carry out a sham presidential election in 2021 and wash its hands of the UN-facilitated political process. The human cost is almost immeasurable. Nearly 60% of Syrians are food insecure, the World Food Program reported last month, and the reckoning is far from over. In a bid to hold Mr. Assad and his inner circle accountable, a complaint was filed in France with a special war crimes unit this week. It focuses on the August 2013 chemical weapons attacks in eastern Ghouta that left 1,400 dead. The story was reported by Scott Peterson in London for The Monitor.
In this Kazu Ishiguro novel, told from the perspective of a robot companion to a teenage girl, we learn what artificial intelligence can teach us about love, hope, inequality, and loneliness.
Clara and the Sun touches on a number of weighty issues, writes reviewer Heller McAlpin, including the insidious encroachments of AI technology, the repercussions of rampant inequality, the degradation of the environment, and the prevalence of loneliness. In her dogged attempts to understand humans, Clara tries to untangle what makes them act the way they do. Is it something to do with what Josie's father calls the human heart in the poetic sense? You can find Heller's full book review in today's issue.
Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on alternatives to a boycott of the Beijing Olympics. China has jailed nearly every major voice in Hong Kong, opposing its efforts to crush local democratic rule in the territory. It has stepped up its harsh treatment of the Uyghur minority in Xinjiang province, leading to claims of genocide. And yet, China is scheduled to host the 2022 Winter Olympics early next year. Around the world, many countries are debating whether to send a signal about these official abuses by not sending their athletes to Beijing. For more than a century, the modern games have served as an opportunity for peaceful contact and greater understanding among nations. Those who would suffer most directly from a boycott are the athletes, who often train for years for their moment in a premier competition. To them, the innate nationalism in the games should not get in the way of the sport itself. Given a boycott's possible damage to Olympic athletes and to the purposes of the event, could something short of a full boycott achieve the same purpose of expressing disapproval of China's abysmal abuse of its citizens? The dazzling spotlight on the games can also shine into China's dark corners. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a film review of a delightful documentary about the men and their dogs unearthing truffles in the forests of Italy. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how studying the life and teachings of the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, can have a transformative effect on our outlook, confidence, and happiness. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Erica Page.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.